After 25 years in the fashion industry, I've realized that fashion is not really about the clothes, it's about the people. I'm Laura Van Root Poole, and this is What We Wore. I had a lovely conversation with sisters Francesca and Marina Moscone. We talked about how they define success and their commitment to what they've created over the past 6 years with their collection, Marina Moscone. I loved witnessing their working dynamic full of trust, love, and mutual respect. I'm trying to think of where I first met y'all and where I first became familiar with the brand. And I think y'all came to the store in Brentwood. I know that. You were so chic and we talked for a minute. And the minute you left, all of the girls in the store said, please pick up that brand. Please, whatever she makes, we'll sell. We want it.
Yeah, it was definitely when I came to Brentwood, when you had just opened your store. And I remember saying to my sales manager when we left, that's the best store.
Yeah. It's a really fun place and a happy place to be. And we've sold the collection so well there. So the girls must have known, and you really knew that you have a client there, and we're thrilled about it.
Well, the girls are so, so, so great. So, I mean, it's always such a joy when we make the trip over.
Well, your sisters, first of all, you have the same last name.
Yep.
And you're not the first sisters we've had. You're actually our third set of sisters on the podcast, which I think is really interesting. Where are y'all from?
We're Italian South African, and we grew up in Vancouver in British Columbia in Canada. So,
oh, wow.
Father's Italian, our mother's from South Africa. So we kind of grew up, you know, went to school in Vancouver. We were both born there and spent our summers at our country house in Italy.
What part?
It's in Abruzzo, which is just east of Rome. We actually just did a full-on demolition renovation of our house together as a fun COVID project. Yeah, fun family project. We just didn't think we were busy enough or stressed enough.
And so was it remote most of
it? Well, it started not remote. The first year was really not remote. And then 2020 was very, very remote. We, of course, had a team on the ground, but it was really everything, you know, we contributed was over FaceTime and WhatsApp video and photos and that sort of thing. And then we could finally start going back, you know, at the beginning of this year to do all the finishing touches. So it was great. And we've been really, really enjoying it. It was finished this past spring.
I'm married to an architect, and I'm actually in the middle of a project, a family project as well. So your parents are involved and the kids. And did everybody agree? And
define agree. We had an amazing architect who's a really good friend of mine from the region. Of course, you know, I have a sensibility for these things, and it was really, really special for me to do a big project that wasn't, it was interesting to do a big project that wasn't collection or clothes.
And so, such a relief, isn't it, too, sometimes? Like, I always need to get my brain doing something completely different than clothes.
Exactly, yeah. So I didn't expect it would be such a sort of cathartic process for me, but it really was. And I loved every minute. We're very lucky. Our dad has more of that engineering mind. So he kind of worked on the technicalities much more than the design and
logistics.
And the logistics. We were very fortunate. We got to kind of focus on the good parts.
Well, and tell me about growing up in Vancouver and growing up in Abruzzo. What did you love about growing up in both of those places? They're both amazing.
You know, our parents came, both immigrated to Vancouver when they were pretty young. So we were very exposed to traveling the world. We went back to Abruzzo every summer. We went to South Africa to visit, you know, our mom's heritage. Heritage was also always such a big part of our family and our upbringing.
How did they get to Vancouver? What was the impetus for that?
For our dad, you know, in a small town in, you know, a more agricultural landscape of Italy, you know, his father was in the war, and post-war, you know, migration just started happening simply because those small towns couldn't sustain growing families anymore. So he immigrated quite young when he was still in grade school. And our mother came over when she was about 20. So she had done a year of university already in Cape Town, you know, also because she grew up during apartheid. She's from a mixed mm-hmm. family. Her parents had really the courage to leave so that their children could have, you know, a better education and a better kind of opportunity ahead of them in terms of school, career, just fulfilling dreams and that sort of thing. So they picked both, you know, separately picked Vancouver. They came at very different times and at that time from very different places, settled there because other family had already moved there from both of their sides. You know, and for us, we were very fortunate to grow up in a place like that because you can do everything from be in a, you know, very kind of metropolitan or city to go, you know, snowshoe or ski to swim in the ocean all in one day. I mean, we didn't take advantage of that at all when we lived there for the first, you know, 20 years of my life, but it's just such a stunningly sort of beautiful place. And I think it has that West Coast sensibility in a way where people are a little bit more pared back, a little bit more relaxed, you know, a little bit more focused on just a really, really good quality of life. There's a lot of balance, I would say, which is also frustrating at times. when you're kind of like a go-getter.
Yeah. Can be.
Yeah.
An adjustment.
The pace is an adjustment. Yeah, for sure.
We love it, but we crave the pace of the East Coast, I think.
are your parents still in Vancouver?
Yes, yeah. They kind of follow us around.
We see very, very often.
And is it just the two of you?
It's just the two of us.
Oh wow. Francesca, what sort of a big sister was Marina?
So, okay. You know, we're actually 6 years apart.
Which they say is like only children, right?
Yeah.
When you're 5 years, you have, because your parents are so different and all that.
Yes.
Yes.
I was the first child.
She constantly reminds me of, you know, how I came into her life and just turned things upside down. No, but growing up, you know, I always looked up to my sister. I mean, I'm only going to say this once, but she was the, you know, my cool older sister. I wanted, you know, to dress like her, to do what she was doing. She, you know, probably very annoying for her as she wanted to, you know, live her own life. But no, it was interesting because a lot of people ask, you know, how do you work with your sister and work with her, live with her, do, you know, travel together, do everything together. And, you know, the 6 years, we always got along, you know, you're always in a different stage of your life growing up. So we never really got in each other's hair in that respect. We never fought. We just kind of, we were pretty, you know.
We existed at some point and then we became much closer when we were both adults.
Yeah, both adults, of course, you know, you become much closer and we made that really easy to become much closer.
Marina, what's your favorite memory of Francesca growing up?
Oh my God. My favorite memory of Francesca, well, when we were children, of course, when I was born and growing up, my father spoke to me only in Italian and my mother spoke to me in English. So I learned the two languages at the same time. And I would speak to my father and his family in Italian, and I would turn around and speak to my mother and her family in English.
I knew she'd bring this up.
So we were like a multilingual household. And when Francesca was born, we just, you know, assumed she'd fit right in and we would just kind of go with the protocol, go with the program. Exactly. But she came and she started talking and, you know, we would say something in Italian and she would say the translation in English for us. She'd say, no, you're wrong. And this is how you say it. So just her commitment to going against the program is one of my favorite memories.
And Francesca, was it always apparent that Marina was creative, and did you know that she would go into this business always?
Yes, for as long as I can remember, Marina has always known what she wanted to do. She always knew she wanted to be a fashion designer, where she wanted to go to school. She always had that unwavering commitment to that goal, and everything she did to reach that goal. And I remember growing up, you know, that question, what do you want to be when you grow up, that everybody asks. And, you know, Marina always knew, and I was, you know, I didn't know, like, for most of my life what it was that I wanted to be. So I remember it very, very clearly.
And Marina, how did you become interested in fashion, and how did you know that that was something that you could do even?
Growing up, we would, at these summers in Italy, we would spend a lot of time, not just in the country house, but we would go travel everywhere, you know, throughout Europe and throughout Italy. And I would watch my parents, you know, back then there was no, like, buy now, wear now. You shopped kind of for one or two seasons ahead. And I would watch them shop for their wardrobes for the year. And the way that it was presented, you know, was so ceremonious. The way clothes were designed, they were finished, they were presented, they were tailored, they were sold, the whole shopping experience. It was such a special process that and every step of, you know, the involvement from an atelier to a tailor to a sales associate, there was so much kind of pride in the product and the presentation of it. And, you know, I really loved that from the beginning. And I also would sit, there were two shows called, one was Fashion File and it was hosted by Tim Blanks. And this started in like the late 80s or early 90s. And one was Fashion Television, which I think was only in Canada, that was hosted by Jeannie Becker and Tim Blanks. And it was like on every weekend, and on Sunday it was on all day. So, I mean, I've probably seen every episode 40 times. I would watch those, and they would do all these case studies on designers and where they went to school, you know, where they design, what the runway shows, the models, everything. And, you know, I just was so enamored that this could be a job. And when I was 3, I told my parents, I'm going to be a fashion designer. And when I was 7, I told them I'm going to go study at Parsons. And somewhere in between that, I stole one of my dad's briefcases. It was this burgundy leather briefcase. And I stole his, you know, letterheads from his office. And I would do sketches on them with crayons. And I took that briefcase and letterhead sketches everywhere I went, to dinner, if, you know, everywhere. I was so laser focused on being able to do this for my entire upbringing through school. I just did everything to be able to get into school to do this. And it's funny because now I think all the time about, you know, stuff I do and stuff I say yes to, where really it doesn't move the needle in my career or in my life or in my goal.
Right.
But just in comparison to back then, just like unwavering commitment to be able to do this. So I should probably think about, you know, that.
I love that. So that's interesting. You did go to Parsons?
I did, yes.
What was that experience like to finally be what you would wanted to be since you were 7 years old? 3, but be at Parsons.
Listen, it was, I think, probably the best education I could get for what I wanted to do. And I was so serious about my studies. Sometimes I wish, you know, I look back and, you know, maybe I'm just having like a half-life crisis or a one-third now, but I look back and I say, God, I wish I enjoyed, you know, living in New York more or socializing more and those types of things. But again, it goes back to that like discipline and the laser focus. I had at least one or two all-nighters a week for those years. I was, you know, super serious about my projects. You're surrounded, you know, you start with X amount of people and you end up in a pool that's very small. You know, not everyone makes it through. Yeah.
Was there ever a moment when you thought you had wished so much for this and wanted and willed? Was there ever a minute where you thought you couldn't do it or you weren't worthy of it? Or
no.
Never.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
The whole time. Yeah.
Wow. And so you graduated, and what was your first job out of school?
So I graduated in the after the 08 crash. And I was a foreigner without, you know, I'm not American, so I had to get a job if I wanted to stay, because I had to get a visa to work.
Yeah.
So all design assistants were being laid off, design jobs and that sort of thing. And so I got a job, an internship, which turned into a job at a talent agency for fashion photographers and fashion stylists and beauty. And I started working as a producer and agent, which was interesting because, you know, at the time it wasn't what I wanted to do, but I saw just the other spectrum of what we do, and everything is really full circle. I know all of those stylists,
right?
You know, all of those photographers, it's kind of just come around in a different way. And I got to see sort of this, it gave me a 360 degree view of the industry, because I worked on the commercial side of it, producing shoots, working with, you know, ad agencies, creative agencies, going about getting new business for photographers and stylists and that sort of thing. And I was so lucky to be on, you know, I was like 22 or 23, and I was on huge campaign sets and, you know, rubbing elbows with people who at that age I had looked up to so much, you know, for a lot of my upbringings. And then after that, I got a job after a couple of years. I really wanted to get back into design, so I got a job as Peter Somm's design director.
I love Peter.
He's just the nicest.
Yeah, he's a great person.
He's a great, great person, super talented. So I worked with him for around 4 or 5 years, and we did everything. He's based in New York. We traveled back and forth to Italy. We did a stint in Hong Kong. You know, I learned a lot there, and he's one of my best friends now.
And what's the most important thing you learned from Peter?
I think how to treat people, and you don't have to do it the way that everyone else does.
Yeah. Yeah, totally agree with that.
Yeah.
He couldn't be more lovely.
Yeah. And that is one thing that people always, always remember.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the first thing I thought of when you said that.
Yeah.
Francesca, will you tell me about your education and sort of where you found your path?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I got my business degree back in Vancouver at the University of British Columbia. Like, kind of, I alluded to it earlier. I never really knew what it was that I wanted to do growing up. You know, people would always ask, and I'd always kind of brush it off. I think, you know, when I graduated, I was working in our family business at the time.
Which is what?
Our father owned, had a mushroom company that grew and marketed and sold mushrooms.
Wow.
For about 20 years, yeah. So most of my life, and before that, you know, he had other businesses, but we always grew up in that world, you know, in kind of his world, going to work with him, being surrounded by, you know, we would go everywhere. We would go into every meeting. There was no, like,
yeah. And he was an entrepreneur. I mean,
he's a mechanical engineer. It's his degree is in mechanical engineering, but he is an entrepreneur.
How fascinating. And so out of school, you went to work with him?
Yeah, I was working with him. And I was working with him, you know, throughout school as sure. well in like summers. And then I didn't know what I was going to do, but I always knew that I would end up doing something with my sister.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I knew that.
And did Marina know that?
I didn't know that until now.
We should
see. We're learning often. New things.
We're learning a lot today, Laura.
Revelations. How did you know that it was the right time to partner with Marina, and how did you ask her or tell her?
I don't know if either of us really asked one another.
No.
I think it just, you know, there was a time Marina was transitioning in her career. And, you know, I won't speak for you, but I think you were receiving a lot of opportunities that weren't necessarily exciting her. And I was at a time where I was, you know, I didn't really have any major commitments to anything. And I think we kind of just sat down one day and she was like, I think it's time that I do what I've always wanted to do. And I'm going to need a business plan. Do you want to help me? And if you help me write a business plan, we can do this together.
Yeah. Like,
I don't know. I can't really pinpoint the moment.
That's exactly what happened.
More or less, that happened.
And Marina, were you impressed with her business plan? And were you like, oh, okay, we could actually work together?
Yeah, I mean, we spent months. So I was in New York, she was in Vancouver, and we spent months. I went back and forth. I would spend a couple weeks there in Vancouver, or she'd come out here. And we hashed it out for months. We made it so thorough. And of course we had, you know, our dad, his kind of caliber of this to live up to. So he was looking over our shoulder the whole time. I mean, we killed my mom. We brought into our home, we brought like a whiteboard into the dining room. I started like sketching, showing them like, this is what it looks like to do a collection. And it was just like such a mess. We just hashed it out for months and we really, you know, dotted every I, crossed every T, honed in on every scenario, 5-year plans, 10-year plans, everything.
Did both of y'all know exactly what the collection would be? I mean, was it something that you thought was missing from the market, or you wanted for yourself? Or, I mean, how did that part come about, and how did you know that that was the right thing?
You know, I wanted to make something that was sort of, you know, I have kind of a minimalist sensibility when you look at the clothes, but when you really look at them and you really study the way that they're made, and sort of the techniques, they're actually very maximalist in the finishing constructions. If we do any kind of like embellishment or detail. And I have that, you know, we're based in New York. I've been here for 15 years, but I carry very much with me. And I this is always a starting point for me, my heritage and my culture as a sensibility. So that kind of European sensibility into things. It's not so much that I thought there's a big void for this in the market. It's just, you know, I think there's space and I have something to share. To me, it was always really important and still is to just convey that sort of element of artful luxury, artful pieces that are, you know, no matter what they are, whether it's like the study of an oversized t-shirt or the construction of a blazer or a draped twist satin dress, that it's always, always, always held to the most highest standard of quality. And that is something as we've grown, you know, and as we've sort of grown into the next like pillar of our businesses, that's one thing a lot of people look at again and look at again. I've never cut quality or compromised there.
Wavered. Yeah, I know. I can see that. I also think there's a little bit of Vancouver in it. Like it's a little bit laid back, you know, like it's not hard to wear. It's not uptight at all for being so clean and modern. And I don't know, for me.
I'm glad you said that, because I always wear my clothes very with a flat, with a slide, you know. It's like I'll wear a big shirt with trousers and a blazer, or I'll wear like a twist dress with a blazer on an airplane to go on a work trip. And then, you know, I'll see people styling it in a very different way with a shoe and a heel and a bag and it's a black tie thing for them. So I'm glad you said that, because my intention is always to make things very open to interpretation and to fit into the context of kind of every woman's life. And, you know, I hope I can continue to do that.
Will you talk to me also about the design process and how you collaborate on that, or if you do?
Francesca very much handles the commercial side of things, and she works closely on the financials with our sales team, with our marketing and PR and comms and that kind of thing. And she doesn't step on my toes so much when it comes to sort of my role, which is the more creative sort of realm. For me, it always, the starting point is always with texture, fabric. Maybe I see something, you know, an art piece, and, you know, it just gets kind of the wheels turning in my mind. And from there, I usually go right into fabric development, which is something that we do. I'll work with my mills in Italy. I'll develop fabrics from scratch. You know, it'll kind of start building the collection in my mind. I'm very kind of tactile with the sort of execution of it. And if I can feel the fabrics and I can feel sort of the roundness or the softness or the luminosity of them, then I can kind of start to articulate and develop a collection in my mind. And from there, you know, of course I'm always like you on the road for fittings, for, you know, mostly in Italy, for, you know, all categories of what we do. So I kind of jump around and I see things that kind of, you know, also help to get the wheels turning. And I work closely. I have a small team where we kind of start looking at beautiful art references. We'll go see maybe a few art shows, or we'll go look at, you know, very, very vintage archives just to look at construction detail. We'll, if we get something, we'll maybe take it apart and look at how it was made, if it was made by hand and that sort of thing. And that's always my departure. And it's not always, I don't always get to the finish line the same way, which is the most frustrating thing, because every season at some point I say, I'm not going to make it. And then Francesca's like, you always make it. You're just, you know, and then I get even more frustrated when she says that. You know, I kind of start in the fittings. I sketch a lot. I would say I do like 12 to 15,000 sketches per season just to end up with like 25 looks. But I go dark. I block out like a week, 10 days, 2 weeks in my calendar. And I don't check my phone. I don't check my email, which is frustrating for many people I know. And I just sketch. I sit and I sketch. And yeah, sometimes I'll do it for 12 hours before going outside or before having a cup of coffee or anything, but that's the way it goes. And that turns into maybe I want to, you know, I can't articulate something in a sketch, then I need to drape it. And then we kind of go from there. I work with my pattern maker. We have an atelier in New York. We're very fortunate. We built that almost from the beginning of our brand. So I can work with my pattern makers, work with my seamstress to kind of help articulate, you know, the message or the techniques. We have amazing partners in Italy, like really old school kind of master tailors from Naples, which is really the heart and the home of tailoring, shirting, and menswear, really. So I'm always back and forth with them, kind of articulating techniques, modernizing sort of old school Italian ways and of tailoring and that kind of thing. And, you know, of course, I work closely with Francesca on sort of the feedback from, you know, previous seasons. You know, she's very gentle in her delivery so as not to kill, you know, the romance or dream for me, which I always appreciate. And she kind of is also a barrier between the people who she knows are going to do that to me, which is really, really great.
And Francesca, tell me about your process in that. I mean, you check in, how do you navigate that?
I check in.
Or encourage it.
What stage of the process we're at. No, I encourage it. I mean, I for sure do not have that creative, that skill, that talent to do what she does. You know, we both have our own strengths, and that's why it works. You know, I try not to, like she said, step on her toes. I don't, it's, we put so much out there every season, every year, and I can't, you know, to have to continually come up with newness is just something I very much respect about Marina. Yeah. Like I don't know how she does it. And I, you know, we just need to give her the space and whatever she needs in order to do that and for her to feel good about it, because at the end of the day, we want to put out something that we feel passionate about and that we believe in. So, you know, we check in, you know, there are certain things, we're at a stage of our business where we're obviously experiencing growth and we want to see further growth. You know, there's a feedback loop that is very much, there's open communication. I mean, you know, I spend a lot of time with our sales team, our PR team, a lot of time with also, you know, like your team, Laura, like when mm-hmm. we go into the showroom, the buying teams, whenever we get a chance to get into the stores and talk to the end consumer. So that feedback is so important to what we do and to what we do moving forward. So I do my best to communicate that. as I can. And there's always, you know, constant communication, whether it's with Marina or people on her team about, you know, what kind of the needs are from the more commercial side of the business. And she's very receptive to that. And she also, you know, we're also very much involved in each other's world too. You know, it's our business. We make all the big decisions together. She's very much involved. She wants to know what's going on the business side. She's involved in the sales conversations when it's right, the, you know, press, PR, marketing conversations. There's, you know, we very much know what's going on in each other's world. And I think that's also why it works well. We have a well-rounded kind of 360 view.
Has your dad ever given you advice?
Yes, definitely.
Did you take it?
Yes. And when we haven't, no, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Really rely on him a lot.
Yeah.
Marina, I read that you said every time Francesca and I haven't listened to our gut feelings, we've regretted it deeply. Can you tell me about a time when you didn't and how it went?
Like which one? Yeah. I mean, you know.
And are you two always on the same page about that? I mean, do you, the gut feelings, are they almost always the same?
I think so.
Yeah. I can't really think of a time where we've really like
not been aligned
out about, you know, not been aligned on something.
Yeah. You know, there were just certain things, and these are, you know, I don't know if everyone will understand them because fashion can be so insular and this is very behind the scenes-y, but you know, it's, for instance, in my very first collection, it was just Francesca and I for the first year at least. And, you know, not only did I design it and, you know, she do her job, but we did everything. We did market, we traveled with it, you know, we showed the buyers, we were sales, we were PR, we did everything. You know, we were fortunate to have some like great people come in and look at our first collection. And we had only planned to do two collections a year. We thought that was best for us to focus, you know, also given our bandwidth, given that we're, you know, a sister owned, which is a family owned.
Yeah.
And also because there's just so much stuff out there already, you know, and I just wanted to make thoughtful things. And we had a couple of majors come in and say, well, actually, no, we will really want to see pre-fall next season, or we really want to see, you know, this other collection. So somehow like a year later, we had done like four collections. We were not well.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's things like that where I wish we had just gone with our gut. Sometimes we've listened to outside consultants who we've hired and, you know, have worked well for us over the years on doing things where, you know, I felt we did them too quickly. We could have waited where it wasn't necessary, you know, and I think it just teaches you to go back to that unwavering vision and just say no to the things that don't move the needle. Because And it's not about being, you know, rude or being kind of close-minded, you know, just think outside the box for what you have to do to get to your goal, you know, be progressive, but say no to everything that doesn't move the needle. And, you know, we respect that we have wonderful people around us who give us, you know, professional advice and based on experience and knowledge, you know, in their fields. But at the end of the day, we really have to go back to what we feel is best for our brand.
Tell me about Casa, your home collection.
Yeah, Casa stemmed actually from the start of renovating Via Roma.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So our house, we call it Via Roma because that's the street name. First of all, I love to be in, I mean, like you, I mean, look at your stores, I've seen photos of your house, you know, I love to kind of be in an environment that's been curated and cultivated to make me feel a certain way and to make anyone who comes in to have, you know, the experience that I want them to have. So, you know, Casa, I just thought we have so much, we develop so much of this beautiful tactile sort of artful techniques for the collection. Why can't this go into Casa? And not to mention, you know, some of it is not, it's dead stock. Some of it's left over.
Right, right.
Collection.
Yeah.
So we started making, you know, we had these beautiful cotton textural fil coupés with fringe in gorgeous colors. So we started putting those into throw pillows. You know, we had kind of beautiful hand woven, call it my COVID collection, because I bought a loom and I weaved every single fabric for that collection because all of our mills were closed. So we had all this like leftover hand weaving. So we put those into throw pillows, placemats, all of that kind of thing. And then we said, we have all this amazing, we do all this knitwear. We have all this, you know, quirky colored cashmere yarns. We do all these sort of techniques. Let's make throw blankets with an amazing hand blanket stitch and contrast colors, you know, and cashmere and wool. Let's make sort of valet trays and coasters that are made from raw hides and age really well over time. And again, I try and make everything very open to interpretation and to fit into different contexts. So I think these things fit into, you know, so many different types of homes. It fits into our home here in New York, which is very different from our home in Italy, you know. So I love doing the casa stuff because I think it's a piece of Marina Moscone that everybody can have.
And is it direct to consumer? Is it all DTC? Yeah.
It's
been successful.
Yeah.
And received well.
Yeah.
Great. Are there other categories that you want to explore?
So we're actually launching handbags properly in February 2023, March 2023. That's something we've been working on for over a year.
Yeah. A couple years now.
A couple of years. Yeah. And, you know, for me, I really wanted to wait until the time was really right. Because, you know, I built with Francesca this collection and this brand that had these sort of over time, you know, we're only a 6-year-old brand. So it takes time to develop your pillars, and our pillars, you know, which people came to understand after a few seasons, obviously, were, you know, twisting and draping, sort of that artful luxury, men's inspired tailoring, you know, that sort of thing. The reason we waited, you know, to do sort of handbags was to kind of, you know, have those pillars kind of just penetrate into the marketplace, I suppose. And, you know, we saw that people always came back to us for those same things. And we, you know, saw the kind of customer kind of learn what she could get from us and just always know that she could come back for those things. So the handbags really echo kind of, you know, some of the techniques from the ready to wear, which I'm very excited about. It's a whole other game.
Yeah, I'm sure. In a different part of your brain.
Yeah, really. Yeah. But it's so exciting because I love just being able to kind of complete the world of, we want to do other things. I mean, this is just a start.
What does success look like for Marina Moscone?
We want to continue to grow, and we want to continue to, what we've built over the last 6 years, it's just the beginning, and it's something we're really proud of. And we really, you know, are mindful of putting out into the world only things that we really believe in and are really proud of. And we use that to kind of build our brand and build a community. And I think we just want to continue to do that. And obviously growth is going to be a part of that, and it will be. And so long as we continue to see that, I think we will be happy. We're not doing this to just for fun. We love what we do. We want to do this for hopefully forever.
I don't know if you'll have this. You probably don't have it in Canada. And I don't even know if you have it out of the South, or maybe it's a North Carolina thing. But we have on the highways during construction, they have these signs that say, let them work, let them live. And I always, especially during the recession, like in 2008, that was our mantra around the office, was let them work, let them live. And I do think that it's like, if this is a passion for you, if this is, you know, this is what you want to do in your life, you just want to work. Like, you just want to make things. I know my husband is an architect. He just wants to make things.
Yeah. I mean, it's not work.
And that's not easy.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not easy because you have an emotional connection to it. So everything is that much more difficult when there's emotions attached to it. You know, you just can't let things go sometimes, or you can't, you know, it takes longer to kind of arrive at a place where you're really fulfilled and happy with something that you've done, at least for me. But, you know, I'm so, first of all, I consider myself to be one of the luckiest people in the world because I knew what I wanted to do from a very
it's really rare
age. And I consider myself even luckier that I got to do it. So, you know, if anyone knows what they want to do, do everything you can to do it and to make it happen. Everything you can. Choosing happiness kind of leads to the success that you want in the work. And I think success looks different for everyone. It, you know, I think of it as it's never going to be balanced ever, ever.
I don't believe in that either.
You know, do I get to do something I love every day? Yes. Do I get to do it with people who are amazing and my family? Absolutely. Do I get to take a really nice holiday a couple of times a year with people that I love? Yes. You know, do I get to play tennis and cook and, you know, have people over and travel and, you know, spend quality time with people? Yes. I think that is the whole spectrum of success, you know, not just work.
What did you wear to the prom? Do you have proms in Canada? I've forgotten if this is a thing.
I mean,
I got schooled a couple weeks ago that there are prom-ish things in England. So I'll ask that again, but I don't remember if Canada has prom.
We call it a grad. They don't call it a prom. They call it grad.
Yeah,
right?
It's just like grad. It's not really called prom.
But it's the same.
It's the same.
Okay. All right. Well, I need to hear which
one. So this is so ridiculous. So we were in Italy. So naturally we shopped for my prom dress in Italy. And it was a Max Mara dress from like a runway collection that was very sort of like Grecian and Roman inspired. It had sort of, I mean, now I feel like I'm gonna have to like post this on Instagram or something.
Oh, and just knowing the history of Max Mara, it could have been designed by Corinne Rotfeld, correct? I mean, that was around the time maybe that she was working with them.
Maybe
okay.
Maybe, or like, I don't know if I'm gonna age myself, but. I'll have to look into that, but
what color was it?
It was black. I mean, is like the most, I wear black all the time. Black. It was very Grecian. It had ties that tied around it. I mean, you know, and I wore like layers of pearls with it. Ooh. I wore like very simple black heel.
Hair, makeup, anything?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I got my makeup done. It was, I barely wear makeup now. It was a green shadow.
Oh my God.
But it was tastefully done.
Yeah.
Done.
It was tasteful green. No.
I had a French twist kind of thing with some, you know, loose
tendrils.
Yeah. Some loose kind of hairs in the front. Yeah. My best friend at the time, who was a year older, he came with me and
that sounds like a good look. I like it.
It was a good
look. It sounds on brand.
It was a good look. And I actually went to my best friend's prom the year before with him as his date, and I wore Betsy Johnson dark violet velvet Devereux burnout dress, which at the time it was cut on the bias, had a cowl. I still have it. I still have both.
That's really cool. All right, we need pictures of those. All right, Francesca, you are up. I can't wait.
I remember I came to New York with my, Marina was living here, but we came to visit her, my mom and I, and we bought my dress here. It's a bit weird. And don't let your imagination run wild, but it was Dolce & Gabbana. And it was black. It was
very tasteful.
Spaghetti. Like straps, it had like ruching on the front. It was close, you know, like hugged my body to the floor. Had like a little, very little train.
A mini train.
It was
very tasteful,
actually.
What was the fabric?
I tried it on like a few months ago. I like brought it back here. And I don't know for what reason.
What was the fabric? I think it was like a stretch
crepe.
A stretch crepe. Yeah.
Cool. All right. And hair and makeup, any
hair
memory?
Makeup was pretty, I mean, I got my makeup done. It was pretty neutral. Hair was like a updo that I would never do. Like, again, like, you know, volume at the top. Like, no, it was bad.
Oh, I love
I wasn't proud of that, you know,
choice.
And listen, none of us are proud of it. And really, the fact that you can talk about it is the best part.
Yeah. Fun.
Well, y'all, I thank you so much for spending time with me and spending an hour with me. And I appreciate it so much. And can't wait to see y'all.
It was a pleasure. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.